Hello, everybody. This is Kate Beaters speaking to you from the Forever Cali Project, and I'm really excited to be here with another amazing expert interview for you. And today we are talking about the subject of cancer in dogs, which I think is such a huge topic that we need to talk about. We need to become actually more comfortable with the conversation, so that way if we ever do run into this issue, that it doesn't scare us as much, that we have a little bit of a better understanding because things are always changing. And just to let everyone know, this is the Forever Cali Project, so you can just always listen to this and other interviews, other resources at forever-cali.com. So today I am so honored, seriously. I mean, I've interviewed a lot of people, and this is, like, over the years, like, experts in all sorts of fields, and I'm really, really thrilled to have Dr. Margot Roman from MASH, Main Street Animal Medical Hospital, with us, because she is phenomenal, and she's doing such cool stuff that it would just, for lack of better terms, like, blow your mind. And just from personal experience, my girl Callie, who unfortunately I said goodbye to her a very, very short time ago, I know that one of the differences that I had her for so long and so happy and so healthy was the care I got at Dr. Roman's Animal Hospital. So the first thing I'm going to do is, Dr. Roman, will you please just tell everyone just kind of a brief explanation of how you got into this aspect of veterinary care?
Oh, thank you very much for the nice introduction. Yeah, no, it's my clinic is MASH in Hopkinton. And, you know, one of the things, I graduated veterinary school in 1978. And when I graduated in 78, there was one breed of dog that had cancer, and that was boxers. And we didn't see cancer. Cancer is very, very rare in veterinary medicine. I always wanted to be a veterinarian as a child, and was always bringing home injured dogs and injured cats and trying to fix them up, and my parents would make me find them homes, and I would be devastated because I wanted to keep them. But I really, you know, wanted to be a veterinarian for my entire life, since I was three. So when I got into vet school, and I, you know, you see some of these cases and you start seeing more difficult cases, instead of trying to just say you can't do anything about it because you don't have any other tools, my feeling was I needed more tools. I couldn't just say euthanize your dog when I didn't know other modalities or other ways of doing it. So I started studying acupuncture and was the first woman to take the veterinary acupuncture course in 1975-76 in the United States. So I was very, very early in taking, being introduced during vet school, which was nobody else had ever done that before. And then I took the herbal classes, and I took homeopathy, and I took chiropractic, and I took functional medicine courses. And so the more I learned, the more I knew nothing, and I kept adding more to my toolbox and realizing I still need more tools, because I can't just say there's nothing I can do and you have to euthanize your dog or euthanize your cat. And so, you know, when you have your own animals get sick and you feel like I can do more and I cannot stop at this, that was part of the reason we did this documentary. We tried to do a series called Doctor Do More, because I had to do more. You can't just say euthanize your dog, because I wouldn't do that to my dog. You know, I would try to find something else. So one of the, you know, the idea of switching my practice and becoming a more integrative practice happened in 1993, when I studied with Luc DeShepper homeopathy, and another veil was raised over my eyes about, you know, using pharmaceutical drugs or using the body's own innate ability to heal and energetically changing things with homeopathic remedies. And then you add the herbs and you add the nutraceuticals and you add all these things, and you realize, oh, my gosh, there's so much more that we could enable the body to do to help it heal and live with cancer. So I'm not saying I can cure cancer. I want them to have quality of life living with cancer without pain, you know, being able to have a quality relationship with their caretakers and have it being able to enjoy their lives. So that's been really the drive, is how do we make that happen? And sadly, in conventional medicine, you know, if we can't do surgery or can't do chemo or we can't, you know, radiate or, you know, squelch down into something that we can manage, then we need to euthanize the dog. And I find that just very upsetting. And I think most owners do too, because they're like, is there anything else I can do? And there may not be, but in doing some of the holistic things, you're not doing any harm. And many times they will help that animal have more time and more quality time.
Yeah, and you know, your whole attitude is so important because they are members of our family. I mean, you know, decades ago it used to be, you know, people get a dog and all you really did was kind of feed and walk the dog and maybe play with it and that was it. But, you know, the last, I don't know, decade, maybe two decades, it just so dramatically changed that people are looking at it that, you know, this dog is a member of my family. And you know, since I started the Cali Project, people told me that after their dog had passed away, some people said they didn't get out of bed for a week. Someone told me they didn't get, you know, that they were depressed for like 3 months. And, you know, when I hear things like that,
it's it's so sad.
It is.
I still get upset about my dogs that have died that I did everything I could think of, but then I learned more years later. I'm going, I should have. Why didn't I know how to do that at that point? Why couldn't I have done that at that point? And I mean, go back and reflect 40 years on taking care of animals and ones that you feel like, oh, if I only knew that now, I could have helped that cat or I could have helped that dog. And, you know, that's part of, I think, you know, the growth that doctors need to do. They need to keep their minds as open as possible because right now 52% of dogs are getting cancer. 52%.
And that's what I wanted to ask you. So why the heck? And I don't know if you know this, so I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I have no idea how that compares to people getting cancer. But why the heck are
First of all, dogs age seven times faster than we do. So they're, in 2 years you can have a generation. We need about 18 years for a generation. So here you've got, this is like 9 times as fast, right?
Yeah.
Or 10 times as fast of a generation. Yep. And so, you know, you have these animals exposed to 90,000 chemicals in the environment that weren't there 80 years ago. And there are more and more of them. And now with all the other things that we expose them to, you know, between their over-vaccination and the pesticides we put on them and all that other stuff that we put on just them as an individual, they're living in the same environment with you, eating all the glyphosate and, you know, Roundup exposure on their paws and in their food chain, and then they're getting exposed to, you know, all the chemicals in your house, the toxic chemicals that are in your paints and in your floor cleaners and your furniture, you know, protectors and as well as the electromagnetic fields that are in our homes that we have so much between the Wi-Fi and the 5G. You know, what is that bombardment of EMF doing to cells in our body and vibrating them in ways that are not what nature wanted us to be? You know, so animals are in nature and they're in trees and they're on the ground and they're putting their feet in the ground and they're digging dirt and they're getting their face in dirt and, you know, chewing up bones and that have been buried for weeks. And so they're used to this in this natural inoculation of their microbiome. And what we're doing now is just killing that microbiome off. So for so many years, antibiotics have been so abused and overused that they have disrupted the gut flora and disrupted the whole microbiome of the individual. And if our immune system comes from our gut and from our microbiome, and we're destroying it every day with pesticides that we put on these dogs to keep fleas and ticks off them and all the chemicals in the lawns, how do you expect them to protect themselves from in a natural way? And they can't. They don't know how. And so as this generation after generation gets damaged, and you have that puppy born to that mother who also was bombarded with antibiotics and drugs and you know, flame retardants and all that, and then they're born without a lot of their microbiome that protected their great-great-grandmother because they've been lost over the last 20 years, then where do you have these poor dogs coming into this world? They come in completely in a deficit. And that's part of the big project that I've been working on, which is, you know, using the microbiome of my dogs who I've protected for 27 years, feeding them all organic food and living in a green property with a greenhouse and trying to make sure that we don't damage that microbiome. And it is amazing the changes that we see in these animals, and that by giving them the microbiome from healthy dogs that have not had antibiotics for 27 years, five generations, it makes a difference. It makes a huge difference.
Well,
and, of course, now I have ozone and ultraviolet, and these are other therapies that stimulate the body to stay stronger and precondition the cells in the body to react in a way that's protective.
So that's what I want to ask you about. And actually, it's a two-part question, but my dad was a dentist, so he taught us growing up all about mm-hmm. preventive care. You know, you brush your teeth so you don't get cavities, meaning fillings. And so I mm-hmm. try to live my life as much like that. And I want to ask you, because I'm hearing so much, you know, about, like, in terms of what we're feeding our dogs, also about, like you mentioned, the over-vaccinating, and also now with the flea and tick, which I learned about from taking Callie to your practice. Can you give us just, like a basic overview? Like, should we be avoiding kibble, vaccines, and flea and tick, or, you know?
You wanted it to be a short thing. Well,
oh, okay, all right. Well,
let's
just do short.
Most of the stuff that's commercially available to animals has stuff in it that I wouldn't give my clients, animals, or my pets.
Yeah.
So most dog foods are made with genetically modified ingredients. So
yep.
genetically modified, you know, whatever it is, whether it be corn, wheat, soy,
yep.
It's all genetically, most of it is all genetically modified. And mm-hmm. any of the meat sources that are used in that are also fed those genetically modified grains or soy or wheat. Mm-hmm. Or the pastures that they graze on have Roundup within them, because Roundup or glyphosate is so ubiquitous. So the higher on the food chain you feed, the more toxins you have in the environment, in the body, and it builds up in your body, right? So, you know, when we have these foods that are in dog foods, whether they're kibble-based, which has been heated to 500 degrees, and has has lost a lot of the life force of the food, but it's coming from genetically modified growth pieces, and then they add all the byproduct of these animals that could have had cancer and are condemned or not condemned, but they're not, you know, they're not something that is raised on a farm that's happy and healthy and you know, and just has one bad day. You know, many of these animals
yeah.
have suffered their whole lives, you know, whether they've, you know, chickens in these coops that are just raising thousands and thousands of chickens and slaughtered at 11 weeks of age. Their life has never had any quality to it at all. And you are what you eat, right? You eat that
yep.
kind
yep.
of stuff. How much quality could you be bringing into that young dog that you want to have grow up to be healthy and have a balanced immune system? And so I think a lot of it is coming from the food and then the vaccines. So, you know, my personal dogs have had one plain distemper and one plain parvo as an older puppy, and then they get titrated for the rest of their life. And if they are drop and they go down, then we'd give them a booster. And so giving them vaccines every year and giving them what we call combo wombos with a series of vaccines at once is so overwhelming for the immune system. And veterinarians will say, well, I've been doing this for 30 years, and the rate of cancer has gone up like 500 times in 30 years.
I know. Because
I've been doing this,
yeah.
I don't see any problem with it. And I go, I see a major problem with it. But you can't, you know, people don't want to hear that because, you know, veterinarians are thinking they're doing the best job that they can, because we all have seen distemper in veterinary school, and it's a terrible, terrible, terrible disease. But the last active case of distemper I saw was when I was an intern at Angel in 1978, and I stopped vaccinating my clients for distemper and doing titers on them since 93. So if the animal has antibodies, why am I giving them a vaccine? For what yeah. reason am I causing them more immune attack or immune system when you already know what to do and you keep hitting it? And you confuse the immune system and go, well, I already know that. Shut up and take it again. So it's more expensive to do titers. And my clients realize it's not more expensive. If I have to go through, you know, some kind of cancerous issue, it's
mm-hmm.
cheaper to run a titer than it is to keep giving these vaccines, because the veterinarian just says, well, it's a lot less expensive just to vaccinate. You know, we'll have to do this lab test.
Mm-hmm.
I would much rather spend it on lab work than spend it on chemo. You know?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
And I can't
yeah.
say that one's related to the other, but in my experience, the
yeah.
cases that I get in that are full of, you know, full of vaccines, you know, 52 vaccines, and they have cancer. And I see some animals, too, and I want to admit that they did everything right. They didn't give vaccines. They fed all the, and they got cancer, too. And the weakness of the mother or the grandmother of that dog and the situation where that animal came from, you know, could have been just a weakened piece of gene that set them up for failure. And the fact that they lived to 7, if they had been conventionally vaccinated, probably would have died way earlier than that because they didn't have a strong immune system. So we've damaged the dog species and the cat species with so much overprotection of a lot of things that we think they have to have on them, all these vaccines, all these flea products, you know, all this food that is, you know, has such palatability because they put all these, you know, food-enhanced flavors into them so the dogs will eat them instead of feeding them a wholesome whole grain, you know, whole, not whole grain, but whole food, you know, substance that has nutrients in it because it is what it is, not because you have to add it all in there.
So what happens, and what you're saying, I'm just sitting there, like, you know, thinking about some of Callie's history, seeing what I see other people on social media, you know, doing all the things. And I think, you know, one thing that I learned, you know, and I learned it actually when my parents got really sick, is you have to learn to be an advocate. You absolutely have to be an advocate. And so what happens if, let's say, you know, somebody finds out that their dog does have cancer? And because the good news is not every cancer is a death sentence, which is good. But what kind of things can you do, you know, besides the typical, you know, traditional medicine things? So people realize that there are things they can do.
To find a holistic veterinarian who is looking at nutrition in a different way, not just put them on Hill's diet, put them on Purina diet, but describing how to use food as medicine. And use herbs as medicine. So, you know, animals will graze on things that they need. You know, they'll go out, and my dogs will eat different plants and dig up roots and dig up things and just sort of, and I watch them, and I'm, you know, just impressed with, you know, that they'll go and dig up all this old soil under a rotted tree and start eating it. But it's full of mycelium, which is like mushrooms. You know, so they'll go ahead and they'll certain days they'll go out and go under there and just eat stuff. And I'm like, okay, they must know what, you know, they've got, you know, a very, you know, kind of innate ability to figure out what they might need. You know, I don't want them eating plastic and everything like that, not, you know, that they could dig up from something. But the fact that they're, you know, doing things in nature, it seems like even just yesterday, it was really interesting. My dog, they get raw bone. They're predominant plant-based, my dogs. They're like 92% plant, and I make their own dog food all organic. And we get it from the CSA and from Whole Foods and, you know, get everything organic. And it takes me about 12 and a half hours to make their food. But they do get a small portion of meat, like about 8%. And most of it is from venison, is from hunting season. Or I have clients that, you know, if a deer is hit by a car, they will harvest all the meat. And then they'll give me the byproduct of the neck bones and things like that, which, you know, I love getting that because then I feel less guilt about somebody just actually killed that deer.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
In any case, they had a bone, and there was one little piece of bone that was left over. And Vienna, you know, I wanted her to go on the walk, and I said, just drop the bone in and come. And she was like, I'm not dropping this bone. I'm not going on a walk. I'm just going to swallow it. And I just watched her swallow this piece. I was like, oh, shoot. I don't want her to swallow. But if she's used to eating bones, so the next morning I heard her gut, you know, like sounded like a percolator in there going around.
Yeah.
I felt her belly and there wasn't any pain or anything else, but she was eating grass and she was, you know, doing stuff that I could tell she was uncomfortable. So this piece, which I took a picture of, and it had all these sharp points and not something that I would have wanted to go through my gut, right? And so she's outside eating grass, she's doing stuff. And, you know, I could hear her while I was walking going, you know, and then she has a bowel movement and I picked it up and there was this big piece of bone that was shaped like a jack, like, you know, the jacks that you play.
Yeah.
Jack and ball. I mean, a really irregular thing. And then she was fine. So her body sort of knew that it was there. Her gut was communicating with her brain, and then brain was communicating back, telling her, you got to eat grass, you got to sort of, you know, make this thing go through you. And, you know, she was doing her own thing, doing it to rebalance herself, and I was just watching her doing, you know, knowing what to do. And anyway, that was just, I was worried. I thought, well, if this thing gets caught in there, I'm going to have to go get an x-ray and do all this stuff. But, you know, it just, she did what she had to do. And because her gut is 27 years protected from any generational antibiotic, your gut is your brain. Your brain, gut's your second brain.
So yeah, because we always say we feel that we trust our gut.
Know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I was very impressed with that yesterday.
No, I am too. And really, you know, for everyone listening, it's just so important, because if we think of our dogs as family, which I'm sure anyone listening does think of their dog as family, that you do have to do so much preventively to help your dog, you know, like Dr. Roman is saying, in terms of the food, in terms of making decisions about vaccinations, flea and tick medicine, all sorts of things. And I know you and your clinic, you do have, you know, ways of helping, you know, when a dog does get cancer. Do you want to share, you know, I know that you have a lot of different things, but maybe
part of
share
it is,
something that's,
you know, what's happened to the immune system that it can't identify that something is taking over. And so what you want to do is strengthen all the other organs in the body so that they go, you're not coming into my liver, you're not coming into my lungs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to stand up to you, and we're going to nurture the organs that still have the ability to be supported. And then I do a lot of ozone therapy, which is a high amount. It's 97% oxygen and 3% O3. And what it does is cancer doesn't like to live in a high oxygenated state. It likes to be in a fermented, a lot of sugar, a lot of CO2. And we live in an environment that's so much higher in, you know, CO2 because of climate change and the amount of carbon dioxide in the air. So we're all living in a time where, you know, our CO2 levels are higher than they've ever been, and they're getting higher and higher. And if you remember Inconvenient Truth with Al Gore, you know, and he did this in 2014 where he got on a cherry picker and said where we're going to be in 10 years, and it's already passed in 10 years. I mean, it was 2014 when he was on that cherry picker all the way at the top, that this is where our CO2 levels are going to be. And it's, you know, it's where we are now. I mean, we are past that. So if cancer thrives in CO2, who's going to get cancer? We're all going to get cancer because this is the earth that we live on. This is the air that we're breathing. And with all those other chemicals, we've got to help our bodies stay as strong as possible, because that's the part that is really killing our animals. And that's why I love ozone and ultraviolet light therapy and the microbiome restorative therapy, which we were the first clinic in the world to set up a fecal bank for dogs and cats. So we've done over 16,000 fecal transplants from our practice.
Wow.
So I'm very excited to share that knowledge with other veterinarians, and the veterinarians can work with their clients, and we can get them access to really healthy microbiome.
And you've actually been, you know, before COVID, the pandemic, you were actually traveling all around to different countries speaking about all this.
I do a lot. And I've been actually a lot of lecturing virtually with webinars. I've lectured in Florida and, Romania this year. I mean, I probably lecture like twice or three times a month to conferences. And the microbiome has become a very big topic, and any of your, you know, listeners can look up microbiome and gut-brain connection and look at the research that is going on globally. I mean, in 2000, there was one article on the microbiome, and like 2016, there were 7,000. Now there's probably 50,000 articles every year on microbiome. It's a huge investment of research. And companies that are, you know, making probiotics, figuring out why people have a mental health issue and they're missing species. And it's really exciting way to help animals and humans get healthier.
I think I told you in the beginning before we started recording, you know, I've interviewed a lot of people, but I'm just kind of in some ways speechless, you know, with everything going on. And I am just so grateful for all that you're doing and that you're teaching and your clinic is doing, because the more word gets out, the more people will be able to really, you know, make changes to really give the the dog they love a healthier life, and that's what's so important.
Right.
Dr.
And
Roman,
what
is there
I think also is really important is, well, I was going to say, what I think is really important is when we have these animals, they are, they besides being, you know, loves that we love, but they love us unconditionally. And and they try to mirror, I think, of so many animals that I come in and they, we see what's going on, and the owner is struggling with similar issues, not always the same, but similar issues, and they seem to mirror the owner. And often, in my practice, the owners sort of realize, oh my gosh, I have the same problem. I have hypothyroidism. I have allergies. I have cancer. I have this. And they go through and they realize, I'm doing all this stuff for my dog. I need to do this for me. You know, I need to find a human physician, a naturopath or a functional medicine MD, or someone who has the training that is not just going to try to put me on a pharmaceutical for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Let's figure out how we can get the body to heal itself. And that's the goal of functional medicine doctors, whether they be, you know, in any, you know, whether they be dental, you know, biological dentist or functional MDs or naturopaths, is trying to get the body to try to heal them. And if the dog is the one who is your messenger, who is your little light that guides you, they have done a beautiful job being in your family.
Yeah. And you know, what you said is so to the point. I mean, you couldn't have said a better thing at the end, because, you know, I used to say that to myself all the time. Like, I'm doing all this for Callie. You guys, you know, going to your animal hospital, I started cooking organic for Callie. You know, I was cooking better for her than I was cooking for me. I was making sure, she, you know, with her types of supplements she got and all sorts of stuff. And you know, one of the reasons I really wanted to go to see, you know, to your office is that I figure if I had a bottle of Aleve from 2004, which I don't take because I don't like taking anything, even aspirin, why would I want to be giving stuff like that to my dog? And then when I started taking such great care of Callie, you know, learning about integrative medicine for her and all that, I'm like, if I'm doing all this for her, I better be doing it for me too. And so such a good, solid point.
Exactly.
Dr. Roman, how do people...
But that has been, you know, been my mission of my practice since I started, was having the animals teach the owners what they need to do. And because if the owners are unhealthy, I don't know if I can ever get the cat or the dog healthy, because they love them so much, they're just going to say, I got to go down with the ship, you know. And instead, if the owner gets healthier, it helps the dog feel like I can get healthier too, because, you know, I'm trying to keep up with them. You know, I want to keep up with them, right? So anyway.
Yep. You know, or people who kind of like, oh, I'm just giving my dog a bunch of chips or a bunch of this or a bunch of, you know, and they're, you know, it's such a bad thing. So yes, you're so absolutely right. How do people get in touch with your office to learn more, to bring their dogs in to see you? How do they, what's the best way to reach out? If you want to share your website?
Well, they can go on the website. Yeah, it's www.mashvet.com. And they can also look at the other veterinarians and have your other veterinarians look at the website. We have a lot of educational things. But we also have the website microbiomerestorativetherapy.com, which is linked to the MashVet, so it's easier to get to it through the MashVet.com website. And a lot of research articles on the microbiome, and a peer review journal article that I wrote for a human journal on behavioral changes from the microbiome. And that paper is amazing, to see the changes in some of these dogs that were aggressive and fearful becoming, you know, licking the other dog and smiling and so happy. So that to me is the part that I've been focusing on for the last like 5 years, and finally wrote this peer review journal article, which is on that website. And you can, you know, it was in the Townsend Letters, human journal from October 2020. So that they can read those cases, and they're just amazing. And on my website too, we have a resource page that has interviewed, has a, you know, half hour interview on microbiome, half hour interview on ozone therapy that I did for the Dedham TV, so that's got a lot of detail in it too.
Yeah, you do have a lot of resources, because I remember seeing quite a few of them. So, everyone, go, please go to mashvet.com. There's so many resources. Please start thinking about, you know, like I said, Callie, I just noticed you just stayed happier and healthier for such a long time, and I just know what a difference everyone at MASH made. And that's, again, that's the reason I wanted to share Dr. Roman's her genius and brilliance with all of you, because it's really important. It's really important to know these things, to be aware, so you can take the best care of your dog.
Exactly. And the more people learn, and, you know, and you know, we say, oh, Dr. Google, don't look at the, there's a lot of great information out that other holistic vets have put up and naturopaths have put up and things that, you know, just start to read around. Don't just, you know, just because it's put out by, you know, Merck or Pfizer or one of the big pharmaceutical companies does not mean that's the way we should all be walking.
Agreed. Agreed. Absolutely. I'm so totally with you. So, Dr. Roman, thank you again for taking your time. I know how busy you are and all that, and I so appreciate you sharing this information. This has been absolutely wonderful, so thank you.
You're welcome. Take care, Kate.